Okay, so welcome back to the Private Pilot Podcast. I'm actually coming to you today from Sweden. I am sitting here happily in my family's home. It's raining, so I figured what better day to take all the stuff that I've done recently and finish off episode number 6. We have some stuff from the high performance flight, and we also have some things from the night recurrency flight. I will also be trying to get you something from the flight back to the U.S., but that won't be on this one. That'll be on episode number 7, where I'll probably bring you a brief history of Airbus, which is what SAS is primarily flying over the oceans these days. So sit back and relax, enjoy. I know that the recording quality is not the best that it could be, and for that I apologize, but I think that you should at least find it somewhat educational and at least somewhat interesting for the night recurrency flight, which is our first attempt at in-cockpit recording. So sit back and enjoy.
Newcastle, I guess is what it's called. That's ILG, for those of you looking up the airports. Where I'm going to meet up with my flight instructor, and we're going up in an airplane that he's got access to. It's a nice, fast little airplane. It's called a Columbia. I think it's a Columbia 350. It's his airplane. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, to tie this into the last segment, that what Eric Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic was a Columbia. I think it was a Columbia 300, actually. Also made by the Lance Air Corporation. Anyways, so I'm on my way there now, and should be there in about half an hour. So I won't be talking for all that time, but I figured while I'm on my way there, I would give you a little bit of additional flying advice. Once again, as I've stated before, I'm not a CFI, so this is strictly advice from one pilot to another. So, you know, take it all with a grain of salt, you know, check it over with your instructor and all that stuff. But one of the things that I personally have found is that night flying for me is somewhat interesting. Because for a night flight, and I'll be doing one on the 20th of June, for a night flight, your mind plays tricks on you. As weird as it may sound, don't trust what you see. Because your mind and your eyes and all that stuff all play tricks on you, especially when flying at night. And it makes it kind of interesting, because you know what the elevations are, and you know for a fact that you reset your altimeter. So you know your altimeter is correct, you know that your elevation is correct, and your altitude's correct. And you know that the charts are right. And yet, invariably, at night, I come in slightly high. And the best advice that I can give to people for night flying is, if you can afford to do it, actually, come in a few feet high. You know, because if you come in low, you run the risk of clipping something with the bottom of your airplane, which you really don't want to do. You know, for example, flying in and out of wings, there are buildings there, and there's one or two telephone poles, and there's a pole with a street lamp, and they stick up fairly high close to the end of the runway, especially if you're coming down, you're coming in, starting your final approach there, and you're going to land smack dab on the numbers. You want to come in a little bit lower. So, my recommendation for night flying is actually, you know, pad about 5 feet to where you want to be. And I know that that puts you down on the runway a little bit further up. It means that you have a little bit less runway to play with, but if you're comfortable doing it, you know, maybe add 5 feet. It's not like flying into, say, you know, Philadelphia Northeast, where you've got 7,000, 8,000 feet of runway to play with. So it's one of those things that I just highly recommend, that I also really recommend keeping your knight currency up at Towered Fields. You know, it's there's just nothing like having the additional knowledge that as you're going to redo your knight currency, that you got someone else watching out for you. I usually fly from Philadelphia, from Wingsfield to, Lima October Mike, by the way, to Philadelphia Northeast, which is Papa November Echo. Or occasionally, I'll fly all the way out to Trenton, which is Tango Tango November. Now, and the reason I do this is because both of those airports are towered. So I'll fly out there, I'll do two landings under those conditions, and then I'll fly back home to Wings. And, you know, the last landing is your return home landing, which is automatically a full stop landing anyways. So that's the important thing. Now, another thing, and actually this was kind of interesting, I talked to my local FISDO, the Flight Services District Standards Office, Flight District Standards Office, Flight Service District Office, the local FAA office, how about that? Brain's not working well on a Saturday morning. And discussed night flights with them, because one of my friends, who's also an instructor, and I were having a small debate as to the currency situation as far as do your night landings count for your day landings. Now, according to the FAA, they do. And the reason for this is because night landings are more difficult, it's a harder discipline to keep up, basically. And night landings in general are slightly more difficult just because of the environment than a day landing. If you do your three landings every 90 days at night, you also keep up your day currency by default. It's an automatic, the three count for the day. So my recommendation to people is, I mean, if you know for a fact that you're not going to fly for a while, and then you know that your next flight's going to be a night flight, or at least part of it's going to be a night flight, and you figure, oh crap, that means I got to go out, I got to do three landings a day, and they can just be touch and goes, and I got to do three full stop landings at night, that's a lot of time that I don't want to put on the aircraft additionally if I don't have to, make life easy for yourself. Get the airplane for an hour, go out, do your three landings at night. It carries over. It's the best thing in the world. And it's really smart. It's one of the very smart things that the FAA has done. So anyways, back to night landings. I find that one of the most distracting things in the cockpit during night landings is actually having the internal brightness of the instruments up too far. So I usually tune it back quite a bit, actually, so that I can just read the instruments, but they're not so bright that they affect any of my vision outside the airplane. Now, again, this to me is important because your eyes will play tricks on you. The reasons that we have depth perception is because we have two eyes. The two eyes give us the ability to see things from slightly different angles. And if you focus on an object, and you shut one of your eyes, and look at that object with the other eye, and then switch eyes, depending on which eye is your dominant eye, the object will either move or stay put. If it's your dominant eye, the object will stay put. If it's your other eye, the non-dominant eye, the object will move slightly. So, and that little shift that you see there is actually what gives you depth perception, among other things. It's part of it. And any optometrist out there that feels I'm telling this incorrectly, well, feel free to drop me an email, and I'll more than happily correct it. But anyways, all of that aside, the issue is that your depth perception's a little bit squirrely at night, because everything's black. The ground's black. The obstructions are black. The houses, the buildings, if there are no lights on, they're all black. Because it's dark. So what you really need to do at night is just be careful. Be careful, know your altitudes. Study those altitudes, know them by heart. You know, if you gotta pull out your AFD before you go flying, fine, do that. I do it every time before I go out on a night flight. I write the altitudes of the runways down. I write the lengths of the runways down. I know that my weakness, for example, lies in short field landings. I've never been overly comfortable with them. I can do them when I have to. But I've never been overly comfortable with them. So, when I start looking for a place to do night flights to, what am I obviously not looking for? I'm not looking for a short field landing. I don't want to do a short field landing at night. I'd much rather do a regular landing. So that's what I look for. And you have to keep your mind in the game. You have to basically keep your mind in the game to such an extent that whatever type of landing you want to do, that's what you set yourself up for. And also remember that for a night landing, once you have your private certificate, your own feeling in your abilities to do it is going to be so much more important than anything else. If you know for a fact that you nail a standard, say, 3,000-foot runway landing every time, then find a 3,000-foot runway. Do what makes you feel comfortable. Know your personal limits. This is something that I can't stress enough. Not knowing your personal limits is what kills pilots. You have to know your personal limits when you go flying. You have to know that if you fly under certain conditions, you're going to feel uncomfortable. Now, as time goes on, you should be able to start expanding your limits. Until very recently, for example, I was terrified of flying in an 18-knot crosswind. But because of having been up and done it a few times with friends in the airplane who are instructors, I'm now much more comfortable flying in an 18-knot crosswind. And that's what you have to do. You have to get comfortable doing it. And when my friends were flying with me, they were not flying with me as instructors, although they are. They were flying with me as passengers. And I told them, look, I'm not comfortable in an 18-knot crosswind. If you see me faltering, take the airplane. But because they're not there as instructors, they're not automatically going to do it. Now, also, the other thing to remember, it's very important, and this is a discussion that's been going on the AOPA forum, is if your instructor grabs the airplane, it's probably for a good reason. Now, sometimes they'll grab it when there's not a good reason. Because they're a new instructor, they're nervous, whatever their logic may be. If your instructor has a tendency just to grab the airplane, just talk to them about it. You know, let them know that if they're going to grab the airplane, if they're going to hold on to the control yokes, whatever they're going to do, to make sure that before they do it, they tell you that it's their airplane. You know, there's nothing worse than having an instructor grab a control yoke and you don't know what's going to happen and suddenly someone else is flying your airplane for you. Anyways, all of that aside, back to the night flying. The important thing to remember with night flying is trust your own instincts. Trust your own knowledge in your own limits. Know what those limits are and fly your limits. Don't fly if you don't feel safe. That's the number one thing I can tell you. Anyways, I've gone on a little ways now about night flying, so I'm going to let you go. And hopefully you'll get some cockpit recording here. We're going to test out our new high-fangled microphone here, high-tech microphone that supposedly will record even transmissions in the cockpit. So if it does, then you'll get a small glimpse into cockpit communications, and once again you'll hear my flight instructor, Alex, who is going to take me through this flight here today. So I hope all is good, and I hope that it works. It's always fun to test out a new thing when you've never tried it before. Especially when you're trying to do something useful, like, you know, get a new sign-off. So, we'll see if it works, and if it doesn't work, well, then I'll tell you about it after I land. Alright? So, happy flying to all of you. Okay, so welcome back to the Private Pilot Podcast. We're coming to you today from Grove City Airport, out on the western side of Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. Flew out here with Alex in a Columbia 400, actually. Working on a high-performance sign-off. And, well, that's pretty much it for now, I guess. We're going to try to get you some in-cockpit voice recording if we can. Haven't yet fully got that system figured out, but we're working on it on the flight home, and that's pretty much it. So hope you have a fun time listening in on that. Aside from that, you know, it's a nice little airport. A lot of glider stuff going on out here. There's skydivers. Just had the skydiving plane take off, and a glider plane just took off. So it's definitely a busy little field. It's also a fairly nice little field. So, yeah. Come on out. Take a look at Grove City Airport out in western Pennsylvania. That's pretty much it for now. I guess I will... I'll be coming back to you, hopefully, inside the aircraft later on. If not... Can't get that system to work, I'll talk to you on the way back home to my place, where I'll give you all the fun details of the flight. It's a beautiful airplane. It's a fully glass cockpit, you know, integrated systems, composite airplane. Nice, nice. But I'll see if I can't get Alex to talk to you a little bit more about it. So, stay tuned.
Again, unfortunately, I could not get the cockpit recorder working for that particular flight, but instead I have my night flight. Flew it with a friend of mine called Emmett Plant. You'll hear a little bit more about that momentarily. We're going to give you basically the pre-flight, the walk-around, and then also the in-flight recording for the first leg of the night flight, which was from Wings Field, Lima October Mike, to Philadelphia Northeast, which is Papa November Echo. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Okay, so welcome back to the Private Pilot Podcast. I am now here with Emmett Plant.
Hi!
And you're going to actually brave the skies with me?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's the best idea in the world. I know my mother doesn't think it's the best idea in the world, but I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to basically give you a very brief rundown of what is required to fly from a legal perspective.
Okay.
Because people would think, what the hell, right?
Right.
You just touch yourself in an airplane and good to go. It's a little bit more involved than that. First off, you need to have your medical certification on you if you're the pilot. And it has to be on you, or actually physically, like, with you, so...
As opposed to like an FCC license, which is somewhere at the station, this has to be on your person.
Well, this has to be somewhere in the airplane. So, right. As you can see, I've got my happy little second-class medical certificate. And then you need your pilot license, which I've got in here somewhere. That's the little thing that says you're legal to fly.
Gotcha.
And then there's a whole bunch of little books and manuals you need. Now, there are some for the airplane, too, and we'll get to those once we get into the airplane.
Okay.
But there are a few that you always need to have with you. As stupid as it may sound, you need to have the federal air rules with you.
That's a legal requirement?
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be, once again, not on your person, but it's got to be in the airplane somewhere.
Okay. That's a pretty heavy book.
Yeah.
Are they just trying to make people buy, like, bigger planes?
I don't know if they're trying to make them buy bigger planes, but I know you got to rebuy the book every year, so... I secretly think it's the FAA that hates me.
Okay.
You know,
you specifically.
Me specifically. Yeah, they love everybody else, but they hate me specifically. I do have an emergency radio, however, the batteries are dead.
Is that an EPIRB?
is a Vertex.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the VX7R.
Yep.
This is nearly the same model, but not waterproof.
The other thing that you need, an airport facilities directory for the area in which you are flying.
Okay.
Basically, this contains every little piece of information you could ever want to know about any of the airports that you're flying into.
Okay.
I've actually cheated and written it all down in advance, so we can just toss this in the bag.
But you have to have it.
Have to have it.
Okay.
Same thing, even though a lot of planes nowadays are equipped with GPS, you gotta have a chart.
Okay.
Preferably of where you're flying to, but you gotta have a chart. In my case, I actually, this is what's known as a terminal area chart. So,
A TAC.
So if I spread it out, it's kind of dark, but if I spread it out, and you look sort of into it, you'll notice that it's upside down. Here we go, it's right set up. Here we got Philadelphia right here.
Right.
So it's a close-in view, rather,
right,
of the entire area, which is what the terminal area chart gives you. It gives you specifically the area right around a Class Bravo airport, which is what Philadelphia is.
Okay.
So, gotta have one of that. We will most likely never pull this out during the entire flight, because we shouldn't need to.
In case we get lost.
At night, that's a little bit harder. Much harder at night. So those are the things that you absolutely must have. Now, I've got other fun things here. I've got my checklist. Obviously, what pilot would be a pilot without a checklist?
Right.
I have my E6B calculator. I realize that there are no electronics in it, but it's still called a calculator.
Well, it's still called a computer.
You're right. I'm sorry. A computer. Yes. It's a calculator, too, because it's got nifty little calculation functions. So those are the things that you must have on your outside person.
Okay.
Inside the airplane, we have to have the registration. We have to do the weight and balance, which I've already done.
Right.
We have to have the airworthiness certificate that basically says, yes, this plane is good to fly.
Right.
And we have to have the operations manual.
Okay. Which I'm assuming are all in the plane right now.
Yes.
We'll check once we get in there.
Yes. That's the nice thing with rental planes, 99 times out of 100, it's all there.
Good.
Makes you not have to think anything. So, I guess now the next step is we're going to start the walk around, and I'm actually going to shut this off for about 2 seconds, because I'm going to go inside and do, like, the standard bookkeeping for the flight school.
Sure, but meanwhile, the cool thing is for the listener, they'll be able to travel through time.
Yes, they will.
It'll be instant for them.
It will. It's kind of cool.
Awesome.
As a matter of fact, if we play the earlier part of the podcast, they get to skip 2 weeks.
Nice!
Isn't it, though?
Wow, flux capacitor in the back of this Piper.
Oh, yeah. It's nice. So we'll be back momentarily. Okay, welcome back to the Private Pilot Podcast. I have actually let you skip a little bit more than originally planned. I checked the lights, checked the stall warning horn, and I have put the flaps down.
Okay.
So, that's basically what you missed. I checked the lights and put the flaps down. So now the next part is we got to walk around this aircraft. We got to make sure that it's safe to fly. We got to make sure that there are no major defects on it. And the best place to start is always right here in this corner, next to the side where you get in.
Okay.
So in the Archer, that's on the right side of the airplane. And let me shut the baggage compartment here. We're going to check to make sure that all the little actuator rods are moving properly and the flaps are loose. We're going to check to make sure that the ailerons go up and down. Yeah. Same thing with the actuator rods here, make sure they're functioning. And then we're going to look for major defects in the wing. Anything that from a, you know, 3-4 feet away stands out as a major dent.
Well, there is a major problem I can see right now.
My stuff is on the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to take care of that before we get in the plane.
Okay.
Next thing we're going to do is my favorite part. We're going to test and sump the fuel. So I'm going to put you down here, people. You're now lying on the wing of an Archer. Looks good. And I'm going to sump it. What you do right underneath the wing, there's a little sump hole. I got my fuel sample in my little testing cup, and I'm going to smell it to make sure it's aviation fuel. And we're going to check it for any major air bubbles, which I don't see any. And if we hold it up against the wing, it's a nice clear blue color. So we know it's 100 low lead fuel.
Okay.
Which is what this airplane takes.
What is the smell difference from, you know, automotive fuel?
Take a whiff.
higher alcohol content, higher metal content as well?
Slightly higher alcohol, slightly higher metal content.
Okay.
So now we've checked over the one wing here, and everything seems to be in order, so I'm going to shut the flashlight off again. And the next step, basically, is now that this wing is done, we're going to declare this wing to be finished.
Okay.
This wing is set for flight, so I'm going to untie it, which involves me getting down on my knees again. So you'll have to listen to me from this angle. And you'll hear fun little scraping sounds, and that's the ropes being removed here. And because somebody was kind enough to chalk this airplane, moving the chalk.
The other side?
Huh? No, the one behind is fine.
Oh, okay. We'll drive in front of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Next step. Move over toward the engine. Actually, I'm going to check the wheel. I forgot to do that. So let me get down here and get my flashlight again. Wheel looks good. Brake looks good. Struts are good. And nice, perfect. So now while I'm already down on my knees, I may as well stay there. I'm going to check the exhaust valve here. Listening for a metallic clang. If you can hear there. Or better. I check the brake on the front wheel, make sure the front wheel looks good, make sure that there's enough space in the front strut. You're looking for about 4-finger width. And then the next part is we're going to double check the oil here. So we're going to do that. I'm going to put you guys down again. And we're going to pull this out. We got a Cessna coming in, so if it gets hard to hear me, I apologize. And it's actually probably about 7, so it's perfect. And, we'll shut you guys down for a second here. We're going to help these guys park the airplane as sort of a courtesy. And plus, it'll shut them up faster. So, we'll be back momentarily. And by the time we get back, we'll probably be in the airplane and set to go.
Okay, so we're once again coming to you live from the Private Pilot Podcast. And the volume is not as high as I would like, but it's still at least accepting something. You're going to want to move your microphone closer to your mouth. You're going to want to have it just about where I got mine.
How's that?
That's much better.
Okay.
Cool. All right, so now we are all set here. I'm going to shut this window.
Is there anybody to control the volume on these?
Yes, we're going to... On your other side, you've got a little tiny knob.
Here?
That should control the volume a little bit, yes.
Oh, good, good. That's much better.
All right. Enter. We're getting our GPS is set here. Okay. On the ground, so I'm going to do this. Oh.
That feels so good.
Yes, and we're actually going to turn the air conditioning on once we're in the air, because yes, this Archer is so cool, it has air conditioning. Okay, so now the transponder is on standby. That's the little box right in front of you there.
Right.
We are going to listen into the ATIS. The ATIS is set on COM 2. Now listen here.
Do not overfly school on your right on final approach to runway 24. On departure, climb to 1,300 before turning.
The ATIS, the air, basically the weather system for
going.
Traffic citation, jet taxi to runway 24 wings.
What's that? We're going to be behind the citation.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you on the way back.
Okay. So I'm going to shut this warning light off here because I don't need that warning light.
there was any sort of, like, internal, altimeter.
No, that's right,
voltmeter.
Yeah, that's what that is. That basically tells you how many amps you're drawing.
Nice.
Making sure that you're, drawing enough. Alrighty, cool. Everything seems to be moving nicely. And we're just slowly cruising out here to the runway. It's actually good that we took the time to do that because, it'll give the wake turbulence from the Cessna a little bit of time to settle, or from the Citation a little bit of time to settle.
Right.
I guess it technically is a Cessna.
So you're not sucking its wake?
More so that we're not bouncing up and down like idiots.
Okay.
That would be bad and uncomfortable.
Okay.
Believe me, that would be bad and uncomfortable. So the trick is actually going to be to find a point on the runway that's further up than he took, that's further like toward us than he took off.
Gotcha.
And take off before that point. Okay, so now we're all set here. We have no one coming in because we're checking out there to make sure no one's coming in. So I'm going to call up again.
Wingsfield, Archer 340, Pop Alpha, departing on runway 24, Wingsfield.
And for the departure, we're going to shut that off because we want as little drawing on the voltage meter as possible. And we got our notch of flaps in. And when we get in the air, we'll just turn the air conditioning on again. Make ourselves nice and comfy.
Yeah, we could lose a few pounds this way, though.
Yeah, right? Hi, welcome to sauna air. Okay. Lined up along the runway. Make sure that you're nice and set to go. And then smoothly apply power by pushing the throttle forward, never too fast. And as you apply power, slowly apply right rudder pedal to counteract the torquing forces of the airplane. And you should go fairly straight down the runway, maybe a little bit off depending on how you land in the first place. We're now at 50 knots, passing 55, passing 60, passing 65, and we're going to start rotating up here, gently, 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 up we go, up we go, up we go, here we go, nice and smooth.
Us.
Yes. We know that they see us. They know we're we are.
Bonus.
Now what I'm actually doing is I'm slowing the airplane down a little bit into cruise mode here. I'm going to trim her down a bit. She's going. Alright, Lee, okay. Alright, she's going up a little bit, so we're going to put that big Sikorsky 430 in my heel up. 3 north west. Going to bring it on top of the airport down Route 1, landing at Raleigh. Alrighty. And we're stuck about 1,006 here. That's pretty good altitude for Philadelphia Northeast. And we're 9 miles out, so we're going to listen to their ATIS here.
Tower 7NJ taxi in.
7NJ taxi in. 7NJ. Now we're going to cross over just going to wait until we're a little bit further out here. We're going to clear the end of the airport here, and then we're going to start our descent into her. And we're going to do a pre-landing check here. Battery, alternator, fuel pump, magnetos, lights, transponder, mixture, throttle. Check. Okay, and we're coming up here on the edge of the runway. It's always easy to tell because in this case there's a road that runs right parallel to it. So now we are at the end of the runway here, so I'm going to throttle her down to about 1700 RPMs. We're going to add our first notch of flaps. And we're going to begin our base turn. So we do a very nice smooth turn, smooth controlled turn. Notice that you don't feel many G-forces pressing you. Alrighty. Now we're nice and smooth here, perfect. And the second notch of flaps. Check that. Yeah, a little bit high. That's fine. Going a little bit out, but that's also better. Out is always preferable to in. And once again, especially at night, out is always preferable to in. And you can see the runway coming in here now.
Apologize apologize for the fact that the microphone was probably not as strong as I would have liked it on that particular recording. But it worked. You got to hear at least what it sounds like somewhat flying a smaller airplane. And that's pretty much it. I'm going to leave you here for this one. It's been a longer than usual podcast. We're almost pushing 55 minutes here. So, well, 52 maybe. So, I'm going to leave you here. The next one, I will give you a brief history of Airbus. And probably the one after that, I'll try to have Alex back on. And we'll talk a little bit about the Columbia aircraft. So once again, thank you for listening, and happy and safe flying.